This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
What's your favourite football chant?
Oh, there are loads of them. Most of them I can't repeat, so I'll replace the bad words with other bits so you get it. But it's, my old man said, be a City fan. But I said, testicles, your lady parts, your lady parts. I'd rather fornicate with a bucket with a big hole in it than be a City fan for just 1 minute.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
And again, at the second time of asking, Tammy Abraham, who's been in such fabulous goal-scoring form this season, did not need to be asked twice. And Tammy Abraham slots home.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for, it's hard to pitch where Villa are now, but I've got two gentlemen from the Upper Holt, Mr. Chris Budd,
hello,
as always.
Hello.
And Max Stokes from Villa on Tour, the YouTube channel.
Good evening.
Everybody's favourite YouTube channel, they're saying at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
But I did notice that you were asked to justify your existence. Was it this week? And you put out a video, Why Do I Vlog?
Oh, well, yeah, I just get a few comments giving me a bit of abuse, but yeah.
I know the Twitter account that prompted you to do this. I spotted it, and the guy's an arsehole, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, a lot of people
just ignore him.
I bet he's the dickhead who brought the hoverboard to the Holt End.
Oh, yeah.
What a bellend.
That was Owen Thompson, I've heard.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Lad.
rumors on the street. So haters, they're irrelevant, basically. If anybody knew the effort that it took to put podcasts, especially this podcast, because the way we record it, and YouTube channels and everything together, if they can do any better, then good luck to them.
Exactly.
Feel free to edit it for us.
But most of you fine specimens are always very supportive, so that's what keeps us rocking and rolling. Both of you went to Wigan, did you not?
We did.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about the whole game, but just wanted to have basically lay a wreath at the...
Get the DW.
You should have laid... Just want to lay a wreath at the memory of that game, and so we can move on. I think a lot of people were actually surprised by how bad that got, and it was completely unexpected. I think we spoke about it on last podcast, but I just wanted to get Max's views.
Yeah, I thought I predicted 4-1. I don't know where that came from, but everyone I was talking to, they were all confident on the day. I have no idea what happened. Even when they went 1-0 up, we just didn't look interested. It was just shocking. It really was.
The subject that a lot of people have been talking about, the actual Aston Villa defence, and you know what's happening to it. I mean, we have a manager who used to play centre-back during his playing career. We have John Terry, one of the most celebrated defenders in the English game in recent times. And we're just bog awful in defence. It's like, we're not talking about just the four defenders at the back. We're talking about defending as a unit. It's all over the place. So we'll get into that. We'll answer a few specific questions on the issue. And then we'll get into what I'm alluding to here with that Wigan result. Was the feeling Where do we stand this season? Are we actually going to challenge for the playoffs, or are we just floating off into mid-table obscurity? So we'll give our feelings, individual feelings, on where we're going to finish at the end, and also look at the next couple of games, because the next two games are against two bottom three teams. So if it's not 6 points, then we might as well all go on holiday. Anyway, let's get on to the 3 points. The first point, Spygate. What did you make of Mr. Bialzi? Is that his name? Bialzi Bar?
Bielsa.
It all kicked off, obviously. They'd spotted a Leeds spy. Sorry, Derby County spotted a Leeds spy. But then in that interview with Frank Lampard, one of the interviews with Frank Lampard about it, he said that they'd spotted a Leeds spy in their previous game they played this season. So pretty much, if they can get away with it, they've been doing it for every game. I mean, that's not just throwing it out there, because as he said, this is kind of normal for anywhere where he's been. And as Pep Guardiola said, this happens overseas all the time. So now there's talk about the EFL actually launching an inquiry. 11 championship clubs have actually written to the EFL to basically have an official inquiry. Bristol City owner Steve Lansdowne has actually called on the EFL to actually have a points deduction for Leeds, and it to be considered in a very serious manner, because obviously it's been doing the rounds in the media at the moment. But I think it does. I mean, what's your views on it? Is it something that needs proper investigation and should be considered for potential fine, Chris?
It's really difficult one to call, because ultimately he hasn't broken the law. It's one of these grey areas of sort of, you know, is it frowned upon? Yeah, but will he care? No. You know, he came out and did his press conference where he was going through all his tactical analysis stuff, didn't he? And that was quite interesting, and he openly admitted it. He doesn't seem to be particularly regretful of what he's done. He says he is, but he won't care. You know, they're going to be going up. He won't care. You know, he says, I can't learn anything about the teams that I'm playing against that I can't already see from watching them. So you kind of wonder, well, why are you even bothering?
I think it's mainly selection to know exactly who's playing. So what do you think about it, Max?
Well, they haven't really said what exactly the spy did. Like, has he actually broken any rules? What was he doing? Was he actually on public land or what? I know it's getting a bit complicated, but Bielsa keeps on saying as well that it's okay in Argentina, but that doesn't really make it okay over here. But the fact that 11 clubs have written to the EFL, it says something's wrong, really.
When you go to Bodymore Heath, getting in there, even if you're a staff member,
you can't get near it, can you?
It's difficult. Mm. You need passes. And like, for example, when we visited there, like officially, the Villa staff, you know, has had to have serious conversations with the person at the gate, because, you know, they want to see passes and clearance and whatever. That suggests that Aston Villa is a football club, want to have optimum security for, you know, obviously a bunch of reasons, but also so nobody knows how they're playing and, you know, how they're actually planning for games. So for Villa, it's very difficult if you want to spy on Villa, but maybe Leeds have found a way. Maybe they're using drones or something. And there's a reason why clubs have security like that. I think Manchester City is out in the middle of nowhere, as a lot of training bases tend to be. But they're set up because they don't want people to spy. So they know there's the potential for it to happen. It's a bit like, you know, when England would play in tournaments and they'd get, this is like going back, I don't know, 20 years or so, before all the, let's say the international players started to come into the Premier League. We would normally get caught out by, definitely Portugal, for example, by players diving and cheating and, you know, playing up to the referees. And we'd always be watching it as fans, English fans, in disgust at these foreigners play acting and all this kind of stuff. But it's just like, well, it's by any means necessary, is their kind of mentality. And since all these players have come into the English game, then everybody's diving around and, you know, trying to pull a fast one and whatever. So this is just part of their culture. This is why 52% voted for Brexit.
We had to go there.
So I'm joking. All I've heard in the last 2 weeks is Brexit, 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 Brexit.
Interspersed between Villa can't defend, Villa can't defend.
Villa can't defend, Brexit. Brexit, Villa can't defend, Brexit, Brexit, Villa can't defend. I think if you get away with it, you can get away with it, but you've got to obviously set your stall out to prevent it as a football club.
Yeah, I think with Leeds as well, it's an interesting one, because would they get the same level of, say, scrutiny, or as some are calling it, overreaction, if they were like mid-table? I don't know if they would, but I think because they're flying high, I think a few people are either be looking to shoot them down, or they're saying, well, why are they there?
Yeah, well, it's always tall poppy syndrome. I mean, you know, Wolves were victims of that as well. You know, obviously they they were flying, and then suddenly it's like, you know, what's Jorge Mendes doing? And it's all very suspicious. How can you afford these players that are like Champions League players? And it's fair enough. I mean, normally the reason why people are calling him out, because if cheats are winning, I'm not saying Wolves or Leeds are cheats, that's why they're getting called out, because they're winning. It's obviously the spotlight's on them.
I mean, part of it is you look at it, the same Wolves, same with Leeds, and you always think with Villa that, well, are we missing a trick? Are we missing a trick?
Yeah, we're always missing the trick.
Are we just overpaying players and saying, yeah, we'll try and buy the league? Why get round it? Let's just throw money at the problem.
Yeah, it's not in a good spirit, I don't think. But I think it's fair game. If you catch somebody spying on you, then just drag him into the training complex, strap him to a goalpost, and then pull his pants down and just fire balls at his backside, I think, and torture him. Target practice.
He'd be fine at Villa then, wouldn't he?
Well, yes, I was going to say Bjarnason wouldn't be able to hit him, that's for sure. Anyway, moving on. How are we concluding this?
I think that rules will be introduced. I can't see them being fined or points being deducted, but I think what will happen is it will become less of a grey area, and there will probably be certain stipulations that will come into play as of next season, probably.
There'll be some like code of conduct brought in or something like that.
Completely.
All right, point number two, over to you, Chris.
Inter Milan are currently serving a 2-game stadium ban for the fans for another bout of racist chanting, this time towards a Napoli player. They'll also serve a 3rd game where their home curva and their ultras won't be allowed in the stadium. So that's 3 games in total without their main home support due to yet another case of, you know, racist chanting, which seems to be the norm and begs the question, are Chelsea and various other teams be getting close to the same treatment?
Yeah, I've been to a couple of like European football supporter conferences, and this is always a big thing. It's called mass punishment, where everybody gets punished for the behavior of just a few fans. And it's something that UEFA are just happy to do because they think it sends a warning. But when you break it down to those individual fans who are like suddenly, you know, Inter Milan season ticket holders in that area or whatever, can't go and see their team and they've done absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, that's surely not right.
No.
But then it also presents a situation where it actually gives power to these racists, where they know that if they do it, then, you know, then they can close a stadium.
Yeah, they can make a statement, can't they? I mean, you see it happening in sort of Eastern Europe, a lot in Croatia and that parts of the world like that, where it's just rife. And it's a difficult one. I mean, I think, you know, will Chelsea get those sorts of sanctions put against them? It's hard to say.
But in both of you, have you, in your experience of Villa, heard going to games away, home and away, have you heard any racist, not even chanting, because I don't think that would get, you know, you get away with that, but in terms of comments and stuff?
I never have. I think it's because maybe Villa are quite a multicultural kind of club, and, you know, you've got all sorts of fans going, but I've never heard anything.
No, I haven't, to be honest with you. It's
I've only seen it online.
Very much. I think it's a bit of a keyboard warrior thing. It's certainly, you know, I know teams like Chelsea have that reputation. You know, they have the links to the, you know, your sort of combat 18s and the British far right and the nationalism. Villa's sort of, if you want to call it, ultra community. They don't have those same links, I don't think.
No.
Chelsea have huge links with Rangers and the, you know, there's all the sort of the nationalistic stuff. But Villa have never been involved in that, have they, really?
Well, going back to the 70s, like Villa were kind of considered more whites and Zulus.
Very multicultural, weren't they?
We're more black. So Villa were seen a bit more right-wingish, and like the Villa hardcore and other groups like that. So it's, and that, you know, that still kind of exists, let's say, in the shadows.
It's certainly not something, I've never heard of it happening in the ground. You know, it's not been something Villa have ever had thrown at them, have they, for even on isolated incidents. We've always been more of a let's just run on the pitch type group of fans for any excuse for a pitch invasion. But it's, you know, I've certainly never experienced it, be it to like a player or even just between the fans or anything. I've never heard that going on, and that seems sort of, you know, 20 odd years ago.
But I've seen, you know, Villa fans being racist on you know, like social media, whatever. Like when Ashley Young, when we got beat by Italy on penalties, I was like, whoa, racism is alive. 2 black players missed the penalties, Ashley Young and I can't remember who else for England. And the reason why they missed those penalties was the colour of their skin, apparently.
Nonsense.
So that was but that flared up, and it just wasn't. It wasn't one or two. It was quite a few people, and you thought, "Wow, racism is certainly in the veneer. Everybody's pretending to be all PC, but underneath it, it's still there."
I think the thing in Britain certainly is, or I've always thought, it's the same with any kind of, you know, like the hooligan stuff as well. You'd be pretty stupid these days to try and do it in the ground because you're simply not going to get away with it. You know, they're so well policed and stewarded, and there's cameras everywhere, that you're just never going to get away with it.
This is the thing that social media brought out. It's what you're saying there is like getting away with it. Well, people shouldn't be doing it.
I completely agree.
Thinking about it, and that's what social media brought out, was that what was suddenly a portal to what people actually think. And that's when you realise there hasn't been that much progression in society. Anyway, moving on swiftly.
Yeah.
To point number three, Mr. Maximilian Stokes. Some rather strange non-league goalkeeping antics.
Yeah, so this is a non-league goalkeeper that the fans had given a point to during the game. I thought that was quite funny. That's what makes non-league, really. You wouldn't get that in the Championship, would you?
Yeah, it was. What was it? It was at the Anfield Town keeper against the Corinthian Casuals.
Yes.
In the pure non-league games where you can actually have a drink while you're watching the game. And it was they were like giving him chips and passed him a pint.
Yeah.
And he duly took a swag of one.
What a lad.
Yeah, fair play to him.
Do you know anything about the Corinthian Casuals, by the way?
I've never heard of them.
I think they're one of the oldest non-league teams. There's this founding story to them, but they have I had a friend who used to play for them, and they have this rule. And it's like this etiquette that if they get a penalty, they miss it on purpose.
Because that's gentlemanly.
Because it's gentleman, yeah, etiquette.
Wow.
I think pretty much at the end of the season, that's where Glenn Whelan will be going to play the remainder of his career.
It's a gimme.
Goalkeepers having drinks in the middle of games. I kind of want to know what the Aston Villa goalkeepers have been doing. I mean, Dan Rogers has been AWOL for a week or two, and maybe they've caught him, I don't know, slipping LSD into the water bottles of Nyland and Kalinic, judging on recent performances.
Yeah, he's a good. He's Ebenezer good. He's Dan Rogers.
Yeah, LSD, I don't think a pint would be responsible.
Kalinic is basically just having a rave in his six-yard box. Acid!
Well, he needs to take something that's going to get him dropped to the floor quickly, because I think he struggles to get down just because he's too big.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, let's get on to the show. Right, we've got big problems. Aston Villa, our home form is hemorrhaging our promotion hopes and our playoff ambitions. This whole game... game of two halves, very much. In the end, though, obviously, we didn't get the win. This is the sixth game, including the FA Cup game, where we haven't actually won at Villa Park. And it's shocking form now. I think we've won, is it 5 out of 14 or 15 games?
Yeah, it's appalling form and way too many draws.
And, you know, you'll always hear in press conferences or whatever, oh, we've only lost two at home or like just under Dean Smith, we've lost one, but we've hardly won. I think we have the 15th best home record or something like that. We were before the whole game.
Yeah, we've conceded more goals at home than anyone.
I mean, let's go to the game. What were your thoughts when we were 1-0 down and then 2-0 down?
It kind of seemed inevitable. The first goal didn't really come as a surprise. And as soon as the first goal came, you were kind of waiting for the second one to arrive and the inevitable sort of toxic atmosphere to kick in, which unfortunately did. It really was so important when Chester got the goal that he did. Regardless for the state of the game, it just calmed the crowd down a bit and said, oh, do you know what, actually, we're still in this. Because I thought at 2-0 it was game over, to be honest. The way we've been playing, I didn't see us coming back.
Well, you sit like a few rows in front of Max, so once you see Max getting a bit toxic, you should go and sort him out.
Yeah, once I start seeing bottles flying over my head.
So, what was your thoughts, Max? At this point, we haven't seen your video, so we don't know how you were going into the game in terms of optimism and then how it kind of panned out.
I did call a draw. I think it had 2-2 written all over it. But as soon as they scored the first goal, I thought to myself, you know, we've seen this all before. And then they got the second and it was like, oh, it's just going to happen again. But as Chris said, get that Chester goal was so important, because I think if we went into the break at 2-0 down, we wouldn't have seen a reaction like we did in the second half.
Dean Smith said it galvanised the team going into the dressing room.
It did. I mean, if you were Hull, they'd be very disappointed, because, you know, Villa had the first 10 minutes where they looked quite lively. But, you know, from as soon as Hull had got the goal, Villa just stopped playing. Hull would have expected to sort of be out of sight at this point. And, you know, Villa, they just gave Villa a glimmer.
But I thought when Villa equalised, I thought that was early enough to set the game up to actually go on to win it. I mean, what was you thinking? Obviously, when Abraham equalised, it wasn't like, oh, we've got a draw here. It must have been like, all right, let's win this.
I was the same. I thought, because we'd been kind of building pressure, and once we got the goal, obviously Green had come on and was starting to look lively, and he really changed the complexion of the game for us. All of a sudden, he was the out ball. As soon as we started being positive and both wingers started running at the fullbacks, we pinned them back and we had a lot of possession and a lot of territory, but actually their goalkeeper didn't have very much to do other than pick the ball out of his net twice, which was disappointing, really.
That's because we had two shots on target the whole game.
Yeah, well, considering we had, you know, was it 60-odd% of the possession, so we had a lot 61, of the ball, but didn't really do much with it. I thought, as you said, you know, once the equaliser came, I thought this will actually give them a little bit of confidence, and I wouldn't be surprised if we go on and get the win here. I think we got into good positions on a number of occasions, but there was almost that sense of them just forcing the issue a little bit, and again, the decision making was wrong, and they kind of panicked. I think, you know, we had enough time, even with sort of 10 minutes to go, to just take our time and work the opportunity a bit more and make a genuinely good chance. And I think we kind of panicked a bit.
Max, do you think one of our issues is we're missing that? I mean, we'll talk about Grealish's absence later on, but are we missing that kind of focal point for play to go through, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely. I think when we did get that second goal, I think we still had, 25 minutes to go, so we should have gone on. I think that's been our mistake in a few games this season. We haven't, you know, really pushed on and really gone for it. But as you said, like, in the final third towards the end of the game yesterday, it just wasn't happening. Like, we gave the ball away too much. Like, crosses were hitting the first man. And Grealish is that man, just to, you know, fire it into him. He can do something, like, bring something magic to the team. But, yeah, it didn't happen yesterday.
What do you think about the double switch, Green and El Ghazi? Because I thought that was pretty much the move that changed the game, because I thought El Ghazi looked like the man who was going to, I mean, give him the ball, and if he's got a couple of players around him, he can actually get rid of them. And I thought Green gave us a bit more of a directness.
Yeah, Green had a lot of the ball, to be fair to him, and he did look lively. Adoma and Balassé, they weren't offering too much. El Ghazi as well, he's only really shone in one game this season, and that was West Brom away, but he was okay yesterday.
But defensively, I mean, when you looked at that first goal, the way we got caught out by the long ball, it just went over the midfield, and suddenly there was an overload of three Hull players on Taylor and Chester. Do you think, well, I'll ask you both, which are your two ideal wide players in terms of, as well as going forward, but obviously tracking back as well?
Yeah, in terms of going both ways, I'd probably play El Ghazi, and ultimately, I'm not sure who I'd play on the other side, because on his day, Kodja can do a good job, and he obviously gives you the goal threat. Adoma generally puts a shift in, so it kind of depends on who you're playing against. I was really impressed with Green. I thought he had the look of a player who had something to prove, and he's sort of making up for lost time, and it was exactly what we needed, that burst of energy. You know, he didn't actually get to the byline and deliver very often, which he's been accused of a few times, but just by getting the ball and getting his head down and running, he actually just got us up the pitch.
Sorry, what about you, Max, in terms of your two preferred for all round?
I'd probably say El Ghazi and Kodja. I think Adoma, I've never been a big fan of Adoma. He just looks lethargic during the game. He jogs around. But yeah, Kodja, he's got that magic.
What they lacked, I think, was that final ball. And that's something you said, you know, you miss with Grealish, is that he dictates the tempo. You know, when we need to slow the game down and pick the right pass, he's normally the one to do that. I think it was a little bit forced. That they were, but you couldn't say they weren't trying in the second half. They'd clearly had a bollocking at half time, and they came out and they ran around, but you never still felt that we were ever quite in control of the ball. We've said numerous times on the pod about, you know, Smith wants to play this sort of ball retention game, and obviously you have to monopolise possession for that to be effective, which Villa simply don't do. You know, we had 61% of the ball but didn't actually do anything with it.
Yeah.
You know, for that return to have two shots on target and you've scored two goals, where you can flip it on its head and say, oh, well, we're really clinical in front of goal. Fair play for that. But at home to anybody in this division, with the asset, you know, the players and the assets that we've got in the squad, you'd say you've got to be having more attempts at goal against whoever you play.
Max.
Yes.
Quick question.
Go on.
What is Conor Hourihan's role in the team?
Oh, well.
Wow, now that is a question.
Yeah, he was class last season. I was a massive, massive fan of him. But I think since the Swansea game on Boxing Day, he's just been a bit absent in games. He just looks he just looks a bit depressed. Like I don't know what it is with him. You know, last season we saw, you know, he's got the threat going forward. And I think when Grealish was fit, especially in the Derby away game this season, you saw him in that defensive midfield role. It's a new role for him and he looked really, really good there. But once Bjarnason or Whelan's in there since Grealish has gone out, he just looks a bit lost. He can really, really go absent in games.
Because he's one of the players that actually has legitimate end product, you know, whether it's free kicks or you know, shooting from outside the box. So that's always the temptation to keep him in the team because you know that he can change a game. But there have been writers, whatever, in the press, and you know, we've obviously spoken about this on the podcast. Is he sometimes goes missing, and the game sometimes passes him by in the middle of the pitch. Which is a concern. I mean, obviously McGinn's running, you know, doing the work of almost three. I think you said, Chris, previous podcasts. But one of my concerns also in this game was what Bjarnason was doing because the game was passing him by, and it was like he was learning to play football at times. He had that chance inside the 6-yard box, a header, and he hit the wrong side of his head, and you know, went in an opposite direction. It was bizarre. Do you think it's a confidence thing? But they don't know what their roles are in that midfield.
Yeah, I don't think we have a proper set three midfield. I think Bjarnason, since he's come back from injury, he's really not looked like he's got any idea what he's doing. I think yesterday as well, he looked like he was going down the channels and like McGinn were firing balls into him down the wing. I'm not sure. Well, clearly Smith has told him to do that, but it's just funny. Like none of them seem to know exactly what their role is.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one with Horan because he does the things he does well. He does very well. But at the moment, he's being asked to do the sort of the defensive midfielder role, which when we're in possession, I don't have too much of a problem with him. I mean, yesterday, I didn't think he was at his best. But he's good when the game opens up and he actually has space and he's not pressured. He like, you know, that sort of in like a quarterback role, as we've called it for a number of months.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, at Derby, who were quite a nice team. Whereas you look at teams sort of like Wigan, Hull, I know various teams that we've seen against Villa recently have sort of, they've almost targeted him. And said, actually, if we don't let him get on the ball and we actually attack him, you know, Horahan's great going forwards, but I do have reservations about him as a kind of a spoiler or as an enforcer, or whatever you want to call it. He's not a physical presence. He's not, that isn't his game, really.
Yeah, because as I was saying a few months ago, I think when Smith came in, like in this division with the players we've got, do we really need an out-and-out DM? Do we really need a Jedinak or a Whelan? And I think Smith pretty much... When we played, I think Derby, he brought Horahan in. We had a home game. I can't remember who we played, but you know, he had Horahan in, and I thought, oh, he's been listening because he's ditched that out and out enforcer type guy. And there's, of course, as you just said, there's teams that we don't really need that security against. But when you're playing Hull, who have just won six on the bounce, and Jared Bowen is somebody. Even if you just like watch some highlights of his goals, it's his movement and he comes out of nowhere and the timings of his run are fantastic. His movement's excellent. And as soon as I saw, I think I watched, because he's on a run, isn't he, of like scoring, you know, X amount of goals in the last six games or whatever. And I was watching five or six of his recent goals and I just looked at that and I thought, oh shit, we're in for big trouble, because one of the problems with Villa's defence is it tends to ball watch a little. And if you've got anybody making moves and running in from deep late, it's going to cause us problems. And straight away, first goal, you'll notice that he could have built a house around him. He was in so much room. And, you know, when he got the ball to put it in for the first goal, and you're just wondering, they've obviously prepared for him. So what's gone wrong here? Why has nobody picked him up? Why is there that overload on that side? And if they had a DM in this game, then he would have obviously been sitting a lot deeper and that long ball wouldn't have been that much of a problem because there would have been an extra man at the back there to obviously stop that 3-on-2 situation.
Yeah, we get that a lot, don't we? Where Villa get outnumbered because we play... Because we're essentially playing a 4-3-3 when we've got the ball. But when we don't have the ball, the two wingers are meant to, in theory, drop back. So you've got a five. But because yesterday we have Bilassi or Kodja a lot of the time, these guys don't track back. You end up with, a lot of the time, four or three on our three lads. Now, McGinn, you can't fault. You know, he's a little terrier. He gets around the field and he does a hell of a lot of running and all the dirty work. But I don't really class Horahan as a spoiler. It's just not his game. Bjarnason was poor yesterday and actually has been poor since he came back from injury. So you're both outnumbered, and the quality of the personnel, they don't do that job. So we kind of just get run on top of. Like Leeds did it endlessly before Christmas, where they'd have like four, five, six guys all committed. they pin us back. And yeah. our lads want to go forwards, but they can't go the other way. So our midfield just gets bypassed. Like, as you said, over that one long ball takes the three midfielders out of the game. The fullback went walkabout. All of a sudden, you've got three or four Hull players onto our back two or three, essentially. It's a bit naive when we don't have the ball.
Max, have you noticed that Villa high press of the early Smith regime, has that disappeared in your view?
Yes, I think it has. I'm not sure why. I can't really pin it on anything, but yeah. I don't know where it's gone, whether it's to do with the midfield. Horahan has, obviously, his form's dipped. He doesn't look interested. I'm not too sure. And I think it'll be quite interesting to see whether bringing Lansbury in, if he was fit, maybe he could do a job in the middle, pushing Horahan and McGinn further forward. I don't know, but he's more mobile than certainly Whelan. And maybe he could do a job, but it's just a case of getting him fit, really.
Because they were trying to play it out the back. So they kept that getting into trouble sometimes. But, you know, you've got to start and learn. And it becomes second nature if you actually, you know, do it and keep trying it and keep trying it.
And that's where we miss Twan Zabi a little bit, isn't it? Because of all of the guys on the back line, he's easily the best athlete. And he's actually quite good on the ball. So he's the one who actually starts our attacks off. He can carry it. So Horahan doesn't have to play quite so deep. Or, you know, he can give the ball to a Grealish or a Horahan or a McGinn or whoever. He's the one who actually starts the attacks off at the moment. It's Chester, and it's a very predictable ball, either out to Taylor or a long ball to Abraham or one of the wingers. And the same with Elphick. Elphick tends to get it, shift it onto his right foot and plays the traditional Elmo ball, as it's become known, just lump down the line.
Yeah. I think, so just a summation of that game, I think because of the knowledge that Hull had won their, you know, previous six games on the trot, people left to all, they were thinking, as you know, it's not a bad result. I think in isolation, though, I think Hull were there for the taking.
Absolutely.
Well, once it was 2-2, so it's disappointing in isolation. And then you start to think, well, who's the teams that really want promotion? And, you know, Leeds were 2-0 down at Villa Park, found a way to win in the end, 3-2. And you just got that feeling that, yeah, if they wanted promotion, they'd have won.
That's something we've levelled at Villa for a while, isn't it? That the way we're set up to play and the way we play, and unfortunately, to throw it at him, but the way Brentford used to play, that they're not set up to play badly and win. If we play really well, we'll probably get a result. But yeah. We're not one of those teams who can grind out. You know, Swansea was a bit of an isolated one where we nicked a very unconvincing 1-0. But generally, we'll always concede.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Indeed.
Right, well, let's get to the reason why we're in mid-table obscurity. It's the defence. And a lot of people have been, actually, they've sent emails to me asking, you know, what's happening. I'll mention those in a second. I mean, we've conceded more than any other team in our home games. Dean Smith is averaging exactly two goals, shipping two goals a game at Villa Park. So we need three goals straight away as we go into any game at Villa Park to actually get have a chance of a win. So I've had a couple of emails, and I think they seem to be triggered by some article asking, what is John Terry's role in all of this? Tony, my old man said, patron, wrote to me and said, I was truly delighted when John Terry was announced as our defensive coach. I don't know if he was defensive coach. I think he was more of a, you know, assistant coach generally, because obviously he's learning the trade, so to speak. His determination, will to win, defensive knowledge and experience are all first class, but somehow our team has not been able to display any of these attributes. Am I being harsh in questioning our coach's influence? Connor Casey also asks, a moment said patron, says, as brutally poor as our defence has been this year, and every player is in there getting well-deserved slating at one point or the other, I'm amazed I'm not hearing or seeing more people question John Terry's role and responsibility in all of this. Interested to hear your thoughts on all of this, because for me, there should be enough quality there that some good coaching, the sum of the parts should be performing better than they are. I just can't see any confidence, and I see a lack of organisation. And isn't that on JT? Regardless of John Terry's role, starters, Dean Smith obviously played as a centre-back throughout his playing career. So when it comes to defence, it should always be in the back of his mind and, you know, some would say second nature. And obviously, I mean, I don't think John Terry's in there as a defensive coach. I mean, that's more NFL, to be frank. And I think he's there more as an assistant coach. But I'm sure Dean Smith and Richard O'Kelly are, will, you know, obviously lean to John Terry when it comes to the defence. I mean, he surely has an input there. And I am astounded by, obviously, there's personnel problems there, but that was more for like consistency and balance, because all the players in their own right are good enough for this league. I mean, if we're in the Premier League, then that would be another conversation. But, you know, Tommy Elphick, he captained Bournemouth to win the championship. So that suggests he's good enough at this level. Neil Taylor, you know, Welsh international fullback and played in the Premier League, obviously with Swansea, so should be good enough at this level. Alan Hutton, well, let's not go there. James Chester had an excellent season last year, obviously being hampered by injury a little bit, so should be good enough for this level. And I thought Neil Taylor performed a lot better in the second half against Hull, just to add that in there. And was playing all right under Smith at the start, when obviously the first thing Smith did was play players in their positions in the defence, which made an immediate impact, because obviously Bruce was playing three right backs at one stage and, you know, Jedinak in there. But as we saw, and as, you know, Chris has said about that defending as a unit, and that midfield, and we saw in that first goal against Hull, just the midfield just got bypassed. There's nobody sitting deep enough. They were like not even marking anybody or in any position to challenge or influence the play at that point. And we've been hit by the crossball on the counter. We're so weak. I mean, Forrest and QPR completely gutted us, as Hull did at the weekend. So in terms of JT, what are you thinking, Stokes?
Oh, it's a difficult one. Obviously, it's his first managerial or role, whatever it is. But yeah, you just can't see what he's doing at the moment. Obviously, it's going to take time for him to implement whatever. But when Smith came in, he settled on a back four. You look at Taylor, Chester, Twanzabe and Hutton, and he stuck with that until injuries ruined that, basically. But when that's been ruffled and we've got Elphick back, he doesn't seem to play how Smith wants him to. He can't bring the ball out like Twanzabe can. And the organisation just really isn't there. It looks like four individuals that have never played together before.
Yeah, and this has been a problem actually with Elphick. I mean, Elphick's had some good games as well when he's come in, but he's never had a chance to probably settle in. But there hasn't been that settled back four, and Elphick's never, I don't think, been part of a settled back four while he's been at Villa.
I think with Terry, it's a difficult one to work out yet, because last season it was very easy to see what he brought to the club. You know, with John Terry, you know you're going to get a leader. He's going to be very organised, and you're going to get someone who's going to throw himself at everything on the back line. In a coaching role, you think, well, is he as tactically switched on? We shall see in the long run. You know, he's still learning his trade. You know, he's always been used to having, you know, high quality players in and around him throughout his career. So he's never actually had to deal with getting the best out of average players.
Yeah.
Not that, as you said, no, this is Villa is a side that should be more than good enough. I think it's about 11 of the players who were on the field for Villa were full internationals. So you're not talking about journeyman lower division players, or, you know, these guys have all experienced big games. So you would have thought as a unit, they are, as to use a Dean Smith phrase, very coachable.
Yeah.
Because I do think, I don't just put the blame at the back four and the goalkeeper. You know, the new guy's
he's settling in, and I accept that. And I think he was poor for the first goal. But then he also made a couple of fantastic saves at Wigan, and his save at the end of the game probably saved us a point from point-blank range. So
the batter cake at the end.
Yeah. Whereas I think further forward is actually where our defensive problems begin, because this has been going on all season, you know, with or without Twan Zabi. You know, I think we had Grealish when we...
Let's not forget we shipped 5 goals against Forest and, you know, Twan Zabi was there. So it's not as if he's like this the golden child.
Yeah, I think we've discussed it on numerous occasions, and the problem lies with how we're set up. We are set up to have the ball, keep it, and shut teams down, like we did at Middlesbrough, like we did at Derby, by passing teams off the field and controlling the tempo of the game. Yeah. But when we give the ball away, we're just not set up to win that ball back. You know, McGinn, bless him, tries so hard and he wins it back. And generally he does win it back, but then we don't control the game. We're constantly chasing.
Which begs the question, I think we had the players at this level to play that way as we've seen against Derby and Middlesbrough, so there's evidence there. So one of this school of thought is, obviously, it always happens when a new manager comes in and starts to lose, and the new manager is liked, and obviously, you know, because he's a Villa fan, he's going to even get more of this, it's going to be magnified, is people start saying, oh, he hasn't got his own players, he needs 2 winders, and it's kind of a cliche.
I think that's bollocks, because our squad is superb.
Yeah, but before that, you've got every manager that we're playing coming out in the pre-match press conference saying, oh, Villa will be playoffs, no problem. They've got one of the best squads in the league. Playoffs, no problem. So I think the tools are already there. So parking that there, who, when he gets into that position to get his own players, Villa, if we're still in this division, we're not going to have the cash to, let's say, upgrade the players we have now. We're going to be getting players, and it's not easy to play the way he wants to play. I think, you know, when you get into the Premier League and you're in the top 6 and you're Pep Guardiola and you can spend 50 million on a bloody left back and the same on a right back, then you can play the way that he wants to play. You can play a version of this with Brentford, but you're not going to get promoted. I mean, he's never finished higher than 9th with Brentford because you're susceptible at the back. You can't control that ball and keep it, so you don't actually have to defend. And this is, it's almost like a bit of a Russian roulette scenario. There isn't a, you know, people are guaranteeing that Smith will bring success because he, once he gets his own players in after 2 winders, he'll get it all right. Well, not on the evidence of what we're watching. And it's kind of his intentions are good if he's got the good players. And I think these players that he has now, are, if he gets them... And don't forget, he's still got half a winder, so he can, you know, even plug whatever gaps. If he needs a bit more of a mobile DM, for example, you know, there's a chance to get one in. I feel that it's going to be interesting if he doesn't get promoted this season to see actually what happens, because I don't think the team, in terms of individual personnel, will be good enough. And I don't know if we will have the resources to get in a team of 11 world beaters who can actually play the way he wants to play to maximum effect. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, I think if we don't go up this year, I don't know if Chester might go, but if Chester does go, I think we're in for much trouble next year.
Well, Grealish will go.
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah.
No Tammy Abraham, no El Ghazi, McGinn. If Ashley Westwood was picked off by a Premier League team, then McGinn's going to go. I mean, any of the promoted teams would probably want him. And then you've got all those, let's say the bottom 8 of the Premier League. It's perfect type of player for them as well. So they'll go for him. They've got the money to attract him, no problem.
And then we'll need to get a whole new 11. So who knows?
Pretty much, yeah. So it's a dicey game. It's... people are also saying, well, if we get promoted this season, we're going to have to rebuild. Well, newsflash, we're going to have to rebuild anyway. But if we're in the Premier League, we'll actually have some collateral to actually rebuild with. And another newsflash, the bottom 10 of the Premier League isn't that much superior to the top 5 or so of the Championship. So I'm pretty sure we'd survive without that much problem. But there would be a transitional season there for sure. But I'd rather be in the Premier League rebuilding than looking forward to a good decade in the Championship.
Now, it's a really difficult one with, you know, because there's been numerous times this season, you know, under Bruce, it was, oh, why can't we just go for it? Why can't we be entertained? And then we've kind of got supposedly what we want in this free-flowing football and still can't defend. And there has to be this at some point in the season where we have a game and you think, yes, we can play beautiful football and we can get on the front foot, but at some point, we can also be pragmatic and go, do you know what? Either we've done the job or we can shut the game down or control it. You know, that overused phrase of sort of in-game management is absolutely non-existent at Villa Park at the moment. We cannot control a game other than when we've played. I remember when we played sort of Bolton, who were very, very poor, and we had a bit of control there. Middlesbrough, it almost seems like that little run of games with Derby, Middlesbrough, up to Blues, that was the Villa's purple patch, and we've actually levelled out to where we actually are.
Well, I mean, there's two things about that. You obviously get the new manager bounce, and I don't think there's been a scientific study on to show exactly what that means. But the interesting thing is, I mean, you know, I'm saying that there's quality in this squad because that Derby and Middlesbrough game, the thing, and the Blues game even, and the way we played against the Baggies showed what this team can do. And that's the alarm bell, because if Smith hadn't done anything in those games, then you could say, yeah, you know, this squad's crap, blah, blah, blah. But any team ever that's ever been in the Championship, if you gave them 2-3-0 wins away to legit promotion candidates, that's as good as it gets. I mean, I never expected to beat any of those teams 3-0. And, you know, what was your feeling when we beat Derby and Middlesbrough? It was like, oh, here we go, happy days.
Derby was a weird one because the whole game we were just on top of them, and that's the thing we haven't seen this season. We're just not consistent over 90 minutes. We'll be, you know, as we saw against Hull, we'll be good one half, crap the other half. And against Derby, we were just something else for 90 minutes, and that's one game. We just need to keep it up, and we're not seeing it this season.
But didn't you see the full potential of what can happen this season in that Derby game?
Yeah, that's the frustrating thing. We're seeing it in the odd game. We're just not seeing it for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah, I think most fans and a lot of the pundits and probably a lot of the other sides as well probably saw that run of games up until sort of the Villa went to the Baggies and thought, you know, fucking hell, Villa are really coming now. There'll have been a few teams at the top, including the top two, would have been looking at that going, yeah, Villa are coming for us.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And the form's just dropped off a cliff. And whether it's teams have worked out how to play against us, you know, is Grealish an integral part of it? Yes, you know, he's going to be an integral part of any team. But
let me interrupt you there just to segue in a question from one of our listeners, Patrick Young, who says, can you and the lads please talk about what portion of our recent fall off in form, and we're talking about the fall off the cliff that you've just mentioned, is due to Jack and Axel being out? I believe it is huge. Maybe talk about them separately if you would. Well, we've kind of done that anyway. As we discussed on the last podcast, teams like, was it Preston had like 10 first team players out of their first 11 injured.
Yep.
As football fans, you look at your own team in like tunnel vision, injuries only happen to you. So when you're saying, you know, Jack and Axel is out, but other teams we've played have had like 5-6 players out, their top men out. I mean, we played Wigan and they still had their top man out.
Norwich, you know, in the top two, and they've lost James Maddison.
Yeah.
He was one of the best midfielders in the league last year.
So it's like them losing Grealish, essentially.
And then pushed on.
And this is the thing, when you look at our team, your team sheet, it looks good. If at this level, obviously you're judging these players on past reputations when it's, you know, players like Balassi, for example, and you think we've got enough to get in the playoffs. And we're not talking about winning this league. I mean, I would like Grealish in the team if you had aspirations of actually, you know, automatic. But if Grealish was out to the end of the season, I would still expect this squad to make the playoffs.
You'd like to think so. I mean, we've said numerous times, haven't we? If Villa can get themselves into that top six, with the players we've got, and if we get our shit together on form, you'd fancy Villa to turn over anybody.
As long as, I mean, if it got to the playoffs, I would want Grealish playing, obviously, fancy our chances to win the playoffs, put it that way. But to get into them, I don't think he's a necessity.
I mean, it's hard to say, is he? It would appear he is at the moment, getting on the front foot. Defensively, not necessarily, that might be a different thing, but certainly when we go through the gears going forward, he is like the integral cog in our machine.
Max,
with the ball.
Other clubs, I think it's not so obvious. That's through my eyes anyway. It's not so obvious when they lose their key man, but when it's Villa, it's just so obvious that something's missing. And with Grealish, you know, there's just going forward, the creative spark is pretty much just gone, and we're not scoring enough goals. We had no shots on target at Wigan. We had, what, two against Hull?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just not there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bizarre
He one. Brings out the best in other players, doesn't he, as well, I think, because he almost sacrifices himself by pulling two players of the opposition on him, because most teams double up on him now.
Yeah.
You know, he's not an unknown quantity. All of a sudden, he gets space for the likes of Hourihane to play in that deep line role. McGinn gets more space, and he can actually bring the wide men into play. We'll play through teams because he'll get Abraham playing into feet as opposed to lumping it from the back up to him.
Yeah.
He gives us in game a plan B or a plan C. He gives us different ways to attack teams as opposed to at the moment. We seem to have one way.
A question about his injury. A question about his injury from Sharon Patel, or amusing about Jack's injury. If shin related, is it time for him to put on big boy shin pads?
Yes.
Would it have prevented his current injury, or is our current bad form because he isn't in the squad, which leads to why have we gone downhill since the West Brom handball? The whole shin pad thing, it's like repetitive strain almost, that shin injury, isn't it? Just from being kicked every game 20 times.
Yeah, well, it's a stress fracture, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Which would suggest it is, which, you know, if you're looking for in any other sort of business world, you'd say that's like asset management. You know, somebody higher up in the club will say, well, we value you at this amount of money. If we ever want to sell you, we can't have you injured if we don't go up.
Yeah.
That's common sense. As far as on the footballing side, yes, or they Villa need to find a way to protect him on the field.
Max, is it a gimmicky thing, these shin pads? Because apparently he does wear shin pads, obviously, but they're lower down, or are they too small? Or what would, if you were his manager, what would you say to him?
Well, yeah, I think, as he said, it's like a gimmick thing. I think Ollie McBurney at Swansea does it as well. I don't know whether it's like a fashion thing, whatever, but yeah, just because he was the most fouled player in the Championship, wasn't he? And just people kicking him all over the place. And I can't remember whether it was a particular incident that caused this injury, but he went down towards the end of the West Brom game. It's not good enough, really. I think he should wear shin pads no matter what. Just protect yourself.
So, bad management, Smith out. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. Get him out. Get Bruce back.
There's one for the clickbait.
Yeah, of all the quotes I took from this, that was it.
I think we've said it a number of times as well, is that we are so nice. And you just think, if we had that nasty streak, in the first 5 minutes, one of our midfielders snapped their main guy in half. The opposition knows they're in a game.
Yeah.
Just fucking leather the twat. But we don't do it. We sit back and go on, you have the ball and we'll let you play. Like, you don't see Hourihan. Hourihan will normally get booked for something stupid. Bjarnason, it's normally a clumsy one. Like, he got booked against Hull for tripping over the ball and pulling someone down.
McGinn
can, definitely.
And he's on 9 yellows at the moment. I think he's one away from having a 2-match suspension.
Yeah, we could be without both of them soon. That'll be a horrific prospect.
Yeah. Right. Well, anyway, let's park that. We haven't really got any conclusions. Apart from, I think the personnel are there. There are big questions about what is Smith doing, and what is Terry, and basically the whole coaching staff in terms of the defence. And it is very odd that we have one of the best defenders in the English league as a coach now, and we can't defend for Toffee.
We're looking for a spark of a light at the end of the tunnel, aren't we? At least something that to show, okay, I can see what they're doing, and I can see a sign of improvement. But we're not seeing any improvement. If anything, they're getting worse.
There is
a scary thing.
The only spark I can think of is the second half was better against Hull, and now we're going to two games against teams in the bottom three, which on paper you think this is a chance to, let's say, recalibrate us for the rest of the season. But historically, I mean, at the start of the season, we struggled against the teams in the bottom three. I think Millwall were in the bottom three and they turned us over. Reading were, and we couldn't beat them at Villa Park. So we've got Paul Lambert returning to Villa Park with Ipswich, and then at the return leg of the Reading game. And I think to have any chance of the playoffs, we need to win both of those games.
I would agree. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think top two. I think that went after Leeds, after they beat us at Villa Park.
I agree with that.
But playoffs, if we can't beat Ipswich at home, bottom of the league Ipswich, I think we've got no hope.
They have the secret weapon of James Collins now, though.
Oh, you know he's going to score. You know he's going to score.
Lump on. First game he played for Ipswich, they won 1-0 clean sheet straight away, but didn't really pan out to them. They got beat by Blackburn, who have suddenly mysteriously appeared above us in the league table. Well, half the league table is pretty much above us.
It seems to be the case every year, doesn't it? Teams just have these crazy runs of form from nowhere. Like Hull have had, 7 unbeaten, 6 wins on the bounce before they played us. And I just think if Villa can get organised, can we go on a run? Yes.
I think we need a winning run. What kind of winning run do we need?
5-6 minimum. We probably need to go at least 10 without a defeat. Yeah. Or probably we can probably only afford one, two maximum defeats, probably one more defeat the rest of the season, which I can't see happening.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. I think the same, you know, 5, 6, 7. I think we went, what was it, 7 last year at the start?
7 on the bounce, January, yeah. February, wasn't it?
Yeah, this time last year. Yeah, we need something like that. I think we're 7 points off the playoffs at the moment, so yeah.
And with the personnel we have up front, that and what we've seen some of the games, it's possible, but the problem is we have the Achilles heel, which is our defence at any given time. A liable... I mean, he had 4 clean sheets in his first 8 games, I think, Dean Smith, but the only reason we can keep a clean sheet is if we just keep the ball and we don't give them actually a chance. It's not as if Nyland was really busy. You'd make the odd, you know, save here and there. Which brings us on to Kalinic. So far, Max, what have you made of him? We spoke about it a little bit in the last podcast, but what's you and your buddy's views on him?
He hasn't had the best start, has he? I think, what, 8 goals in 3 games? I don't think... In the Wigan game, to be fair to him, he made a lot of good saves. I think Wigan could have been 3-4 up at half time. He did make a lot of good saves, but overall, he looks like a presence in the box, and he looks like the makings of a good goalkeeper.
Yeah, you feel kind of sorry for him, don't you? It's really difficult for him to step into a team that's A, got such high expectations of where it, you know, the fans and the club feels it should be, and also a defence that's playing in front of him that's so shaky. You know, he's isolated constantly. And he's obviously not used to playing with these guys, and these guys aren't used to playing with him or with each other, it would appear. So it's, you know, he's either going to have to raise his game, or someone's going to have to get the carnage that's going on in front of him organised. But I think if he can get himself a clean sheet, I think his confidence will grow quite quickly, as Nyland did.
Yeah, but I mean, the funny thing was that he was going to come in as potentially Remy Gard's only signing in the season, obviously, that we got relegated. Obviously, the work permit issues put the kibosh on that. You know, he said in his interview that he was actually, was it 3 times the keeper he was then?
Something like that, yeah. It's a scary prospect, isn't it?
I don't think he would have saved us from getting relegated if he did sign. We can put that in the bank for sure. Just to wrap this off, Max, are you confident of the playoffs?
No, not at all. As you said, I think we need to go on some sort of run. And at the moment, I don't see that happening.
What about Dean Smith getting his career best finish in the league above 9th?
Well, it's funny you say that, because someone asked me yesterday, where do you think we'll finish? And I did actually say 9th, not thinking about Dean Smith's top finish. But yeah, I'm going to say 9th. I don't think there's any way we're going to get playoffs.
Wow. Pessimism from Villa on tour.
Yeah.
I think he's seen enough games to know better.
What's Buddhism telling us?
Can we go up? Yes, we've discussed, we've got the players to, we've got the ammo going forward. But I just... You can't see us not conceding at the moment, and I can't see how it's going to get that much better quick enough. What I can see is us actually having a really good run, but it being too late, and that would frustrate the shit out of all the supporters, because you could quite easily see Villa going unbeaten through April or something, and everyone going, oh wow, yeah, we've got all the momentum going into next season. Oh yeah, but we're going to lose all the players. Here's my outlandish statement that will probably come back to shoot me in the backside. If we get in the top 6, we'll go up. But it's if we can get in the top 6.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling as well.
If we get there, and to get in the top 6, obviously we'd have to be essentially the team with momentum. We'd have to be that late charge. But you look at what we've got going forward, and we could rip any team in this division, and have proven we can, to pieces in either a one-off game or over 2 legs.
Max is saying 9th, though.
Well, it could be, that's the thing. We could finish anywhere. I have a horrible feeling. I think we'll finish 7th and we'll miss out by a point.
Oof. That sounds like a Dan Rogers kind of statement, that one.
Yeah.
Well, you could ask me what I think, but...
Dave, what do you think? Do you even care? Are you over it at this point?
No, as we hinted in the last podcast, as soon as those playoffs aren't reachable, we are turning this into a Manchester United podcast.
Yeah.
Click of the finger. We're going for global reach.
Get that money in.
I'm looking forward to United on Tour YouTube channel as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, get to go and follow them for the pre-season trips to Asia.
Brilliant.
It's all about the listeners and viewers now.
Get that broader demographic. Yeah. Get the Asian market.
No, exactly. Well, no, it's massive. I think I've mentioned it before. I think the demographic of My Old Man Said website is 82% UK. Now, the Arseblog, which is the biggest Arsenal one, I think it's 40% UK, which just shows you what the mass, you know, international readership, listenership, or, you know, they've got a podcast as well, is. I mean, it's once you break the international market, then it's another world. Sadly, we're
miles off.
We're shunned out of it. Those promises of Dr. Tony saying that we would be the biggest team in China and in the top three in the world, you were just thinking, oh God, I'm going to have one of the biggest websites in the world.
And now podcast. We're getting our ass handed to us by Bournemouth.
No, Wigan.
Yeah, and all these pokey little towns with one man and a dog living there.
Yeah.
Literally in Wigan's case.
It'd be good to see Villa on tour at Old Trafford and Anfield. And
maybe one day. Yeah.
Isn't that depressing that we actually have to say it? We'll get to play Anfield one day. When actually, or Old Trafford, where most Villa fans who can remember going to Old Trafford just remember getting spanked every year. Or getting done in that, or getting done in the last year, getting done in the last minute.
I was there 2009 when Gabby put it in to give us a 1-0 win.
Are we still talking about Gabby on this podcast? I thought his name had been banished.
I'd actually sneaked my dad, who's a Man United fan, into the Villa away end as well, because we couldn't get United tickets. And so he had the pleasure of, it was delirium in the away end when Villa, because we hadn't beaten them, we could never beat Ferguson. He tortured us. You know, we would be 2-0 up going into injury time. We'd still manage to get beat 3-2 by United.
Haven't we beaten them once since 1995 or something?
Yeah,
ludicrous. It was, it's an absolute joke, our record, especially at Villa Park. It's as good as a gimme for them.
But following Villa, I mean, I want to be having, you know, taking swings at United and beating Liverpool. That's where I got my joy from. None of this getting whooped by the Wigan. Have I said where we're going to finish?
You can give us a number. Come on, Dave, commit.
Well, if Dean Smith is as good as everybody says he is, we should, I think, scrape into the playoffs, but I'm going for eighth.
That's the spirit.
So that's 7, 8 and 9th. We are really hedging our bets. If any one of those comes true, what are we doing, boys? What are we doing?
I'll put this one out to both of you. If we fail to beat Ipswich, is it season over there and then?
Yes.
Not going to... Those players would have given up internally and they'll be talking to their agents, talking about next season, I think.
I think the level of sort of toxic atmosphere that would be around the ground at that point would be horrible. To walk away from the ground after playing Ipswich, having not won. And I think that the frustrating thing for some of the fan base is you look at where Norwich and Leeds have come from, other teams in the past, Fulham are a great example, Wolves were to a certain extent. If we were struggling now with what you'd considered a brand new team and you thought, oh, well, that team are all going to be there next year, they're going to grow, they're going to improve.
It's a learning curve.
Yeah, completely. We're not going to lose any of them. They're only going to get better. We'll be there. I think most fans would probably... dare I say, accept that. But the fact that we're still under pressure that if we don't go up, this team isn't going to exist. And then you have to start all over again. It seems to be every year since we've gone down, we've had to start again every summer, be it a new manager or new ownership.
Right. And before we go, just a reminder that new for 2019, we are now doing weekly My Old Man Said patron bonus podcast. So if you want to join as a mom's patron, please go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron option. If you're on a mobile device, that's if you first of all you press the 3-line menu button and you'll find the patron option there. Please do join us there because mom's patrons will be on a whole new level for 2019. And if you're listening on iTunes, please do give us a review. Thanks very much. So looking forward to Ipswich? Maybe. Looking forward to Reading? Probably not. But until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Ta-ra.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
I see a lack of organisation and isn't that on JT?
Dave, I'm just literally just going to quickly dash for a piss so you can edit there and I'll be back.
We'll leave that bit in.
Yeah, hell yeah, you will. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
All right.
Wow.
Amateurs. Real amateurs. Can't believe it. Well, I'll carry on because I was going to waffle for a minute anyway. We are waffling, especially that Chris guy just loves to waffle.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.